So as I stated, it's June 4th. We're at our teleconference, Breakthroughs in Mind-Body Practice with Dr. Roger Yonka. I've been working with Dr. Yonka very closely for going on 11 years. I am a mind-body practitioner myself with a combination of Tai Chi and yoga. So I like both. They both do different things for me. And I truly believe in these practices. And I believe that if you haven't started a practice, it is a wonderful addition for your own life. Dr. Yonka has 30 years of clinical practice as a doctor of traditional Chinese medicine. He's dedicated his life to sharing the powerful healing traditions of China. He's the director of the Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi, and he serves as a consultant to hospitals, agencies, and corporations in complementary and integrative medicine. His first book, The Healer Within, is used in hospitals and retreat centers internationally, and his most recent book, The Healing Promise of Qi, is an instant classic in Western literature on Qigong and Tai Chi. Our agenda today includes late-breaking news, plus, and I'm not going to tell you about that. I don't want to steal Dr. Yonka's thunder. Then the next piece is yoga is now incorporating Qigong for more widespread application. The military is even seriously exploring the benefits of Tai Chi and Qigong. Also, Dr. Yonka has been invited to give a keynote presentation at the National Institutes of Health Mind-Body Week, sponsored by the National Institute for Heart, Lung, and Blood. The implications of this NIH Mind-Body Week are profound. In addition, Dr. Yonka and an international team of translators have translated China's key text on medical Qigong, and that release is scheduled for September 2009. Tai Chi Easy has now been implemented by major institutions in California, Nebraska, Arizona, and Arkansas. And we'll also do a Q&A on the three upcoming Tai Chi Easy Practice Leader trainings this summer and a Q&A on the level one of the Qigong and Tai Chi, the level one of the Qigong and Tai Chi teacher certification, which is October 1st through 8th, 2009. I'm going to mute out these additional people that just came in. Welcome. And then, Roger, I'll let you get started with on these topics. And then after we get through these topics, then we'll start some questions that have been submitted by people, and then we'll have the time toward the end for additional Q&A. So I'd like to present Dr. Yonka. Thanks for showing up today, and it's going to be a great teleconference.
Oh, thank you so much, Rhonda. I really appreciate your service. And as I go down the line with these topics, I hope you'll remind me what's next.
I certainly will. Thanks.
The first thing that we want to bring to you all, and thanks so much for being here. We're really thrilled with the turnout. We actually had to upgrade to a larger bridge line because our former bridge line wouldn't handle the numbers. So that's exciting for us, and we know that it's really timely. The whole concept of mind-body practice, another line that we use sometimes to describe this is mind-body energetics. Because of the fact that Chinese medicine and the medicine from India, Ayurvedic medicine, have their baseline of theoretical insight is based on the prana, the chi, the energy, etc. And I'm going to try to reveal here today to you some of the most interesting things that are going on in the arena of mind-body practice. And the definition, by the way, of mind-body practice is pretty much anything that fits in with the Tai Chi, Qigong, yoga, even certain forms of meditation. Certainly meditation has an influence on the body, even though in stillness meditation there is no movement. But the most popular versions or forms of mind-body practice are those that include engaging the body in some sort of modification. So let's say Tai Chi, Qigong, yoga, there's attention to the posture as well as attention to the movement. And one of the definitions of mind-body practice, by the way, is what is called in China, it's called the three intentful corrections. And the three intentful corrections are to correct the body. And you can do this right now, by the way. Correct the body by adjusting your posture. If you happen to be sitting, then adjusting your posture sitting. if you happen to be driving, to adjust your posture driving. If you happen to be standing, to adjust your posture standing. And if you happen to be in a situation where you could listen to this call standing, why not get out of your chair and do some Qigong right now, right through the whole process? In other words, instead of just listening to somebody talking about mind-body practice, why not do the practice while you're listening to the call? So the other pieces of the three intentional corrections: modify the breath, modify the body, modify the breath, and then modify the mind focus, the attention or the consciousness. So let's just go down the line through some of this absolutely fascinating stuff that's happening in our society and in our world. Many of us have been involved in wellness and integrative medicine, have been at work on this for 30, 35, 40 years. And we now have a president and a Congress who are actually using the words prevention and wellness. We have a National Institutes of Health and NIH that's starting to talk about mind-body practice. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes. Insurance companies are trying to figure out how to support people in their pursuit of wellness, and health savings accounts are actually allowing people to spend pre-tax dollars on health enhancement methodologies. So this is we're in a renaissance right now. We are alive in a renaissance. It's a real honor to be alive in a renaissance. So the first thing that I want to mention to you is that myself and a team of colleagues have just finished a comprehensive review of the literature on what is called meditative movement. Meditative movement is another term for mind-body practice. We segmented the entire field of mind-body practice into the Chinese versions and the yoga associated versions, and this particular review is on the benefits of Qigong and Tai Chi. And we went to the literature and eliminated everything but the randomized controlled trials. So this is the first time in the history, honestly, in the first time in the history of the human race, because the Chinese don't approach research in the same way we do in the Western world. So this is the most comprehensive review of literature, research literature on Qigong and Tai Chi that has ever been written. And I am thrilled and honored to have been involved primarily with Dr. Linda Larkey from the University of Arizona in writing this paper. Now, it is not yet published, and it is not something that we can circulate to you to circulate beyond you, but what we can do is give you a peek. And so I'm going to give you a web address and just point you to where you can find this particular paper on research and a bunch of other articles on research in the area of the practice of mind-body practice and moving meditation and et cetera. And that internet address is iiqtc.org. So if you happen to be in front of a computer, if you go to iiqtc.org, and then on the left-hand side, if you go to Qigong and Tai Chi Research, you'll get to the institutes. This is the Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi. You'll get to the research page at our website, and the top two articles, or top two listings there, one of them is the table, which is a big chart of over 75 randomized controlled trials. It's just amazing. By the way, we've done the research on how many randomized controlled trials are there for yoga, and the number there is about 80 or 80, between 80 and 85, depending on how you count it. So Qigong and Tai Chi as a body of mind-body knowledge and yoga as a body of mind-body knowledge are pretty much parallel, which is what we had expected. Now, for those of you who are interested in research, this review will blow your mind. For those of you who are not inclined to the kind of reading that's associated with research, let me just say this one thing for you. The application of Qigong and Tai Chi in healthcare, whether it would be for falls prevention, cardiac, cancer, immune, neurological, everything about the neurological, diabetes, metabolic, when I say neurological, I mean multiple sclerosis and Parkinson's disease and so forth. In other words, the applications for mind-body practice are literally limitless. And so there's two things that are really awesome about that. One is, for those of you who are interested in learning mind-body practice or who have a practice and are always looking for inspiration, here's the inspiration. Mind-body practice makes medicine within the human being that is a medicine more profound than anything that you could buy anywhere for any cost. In other words, the most profound medicine is produced in the human body for free. Now, that's inspiring. For those of you who are into this work, not only for your own personal practice, but you're pursuing a career in mind-body practice, this research, the pulling together of all this research into this one paper, it is your ticket. In other words, when you walk in to the YMCA, the hospital, the social service agency, the military, the corporation, to promote your profession, yourself as a professional in mind-body practice, this is your ticket, because people are going to say to you, well, where's your proof? And it's here. Over the decades, we would say, well, we believe that Qigong and Tai Chi have these benefits. We intuit that Qigong and Tai Chi has these benefits. We're almost positive that Qigong and Tai Chi has these benefits. We could say, you know, the Chinese will tell you that Qigong and Tai Chi has these benefits, but none of that, all that is opinion. And with this review article, the opinions are over, and the information is the facts, the statistics are in, and it is amazing. And so I'm going to leave that topic there for now. We'll take questions later. We probably won't have time to answer every question. We will, perhaps we'll answer some questions by email afterwards, et cetera. Rhonda, would you hand me the second topic?
Right. So did you want to say any more about the yoga? Is incorporating Qigong for more widespread
Absolutely.
Applications?
Thanks so much. So one of the things that people ask all the time, whether you're a yoga teacher or a Tai Chi and Qigong teacher, is what's the difference? And by the way, I want you to know, just for your information, that my personal practice, though my profession is trends towards Chinese medicine, because that is my profession, and I am a teacher of citizens and as well as a teacher of teachers in the area of Qigong and Tai Chi, my personal practice includes what probably looks and feels to most people to be yoga. Now, if you go to China and you look far enough, you'll find that there are kinds of Qigong that look like yoga. And if you go to India and look far enough, you'll find kinds of yoga that look like Qigong. So, you know, in the final analysis, they're all based on the three intentful corrections, body, breath, and mind. So one of the things that yoga has that inherently as a part of its character as it has entered the Western world is it's typically based on stretching and postures, holding postures, etc. And the unique characteristic that's associated with Qigong is that it's more flowing. There are forms of yoga that are more flowing, and there are forms of Qigong that are more stretch and hold. So the difference doesn't really, in the purity of just the definitions, it doesn't stand. But as you know, many yoga classes take place by, you know, changing your clothes and using the mat. And, you know, we talk about being on the mat and off the mat. And the Chinese, for whatever reason, didn't get onto the floor so much. They did their yoga in a chair. And so as we proliferate the mind-body programs more widely throughout our society, yoga and Qigong are starting to melt, and many yoga programs are showing up as being in the chair, if you know what I mean. And a lot of the people who are coming to our training programs are yoga teachers who want to be able to modify their yoga programs with Qigong. And there's actually been some study on the extent to which yoga is merging with Qigong. And unfortunately, I don't have the reference, but I think many of you have probably already seen some of this discussion showing up in the literature. And what's interesting about it is that we're not in China and we're not in India. It's not 1,000 years ago, it's now, and we're in the United States. And the United States is widely known as a society that brings a lot of innovation to bear on both old knowledge and breakthrough knowledge. And so it's not even a surprise that some of the cultural characteristics of Qigong and Tai Chi are melting with some of the cultural characteristics of yoga. So as we go forward, we're going to see probably a lot more of the words mind-body practice, and then we will witness mind-body practice showing up as traditionally associated with the Chinese view, and yoga showing up as it traditionally does in the ancient Hindu and Ayurvedic view. And then we're going to also see these fusion versions of mind-body practice. And I think that every permission exists for fusion. So if you go to China, they change Tai Chi and Qigong all the time. When you go to India, you know that there are many, many versions of yoga. So it's just very, very natural that these things are melting, you know, in the melting pot of the Western world, that these things are going to be melting more and more into what we call mind-body practice, or even my favorite, spirit-mind-body practice, or another one that I like a lot is mind-body energetics. Rhonda, to you.
Yes. Next topic is the military is seriously exploring the benefits of Tai Chi and Qigong, getting involved in mind-body practice. So could you say a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much. Those of you who are listening to this call who have ever been in the military, please contact us if you are inclined to be an advocate of mind-body practice. It's fairly intuitive for most people to think that the military would not be interested in these things. We don't hear about it. It's not the story to tell about what the military does. But it's sort of like an inside report now, and I'm not going to mention names, but I will mention the name of a particular agency because this is very preliminary. But I was honored to be able to have a private meeting by invitation from a general, very high up general in the United States military, who's actually the director of an agency called the Defense Centers on excellence. Defense centers on excellence. And what we were talking about was basically, I'm going to use surgery as the example. And again, my invitation is that if you've ever been in the military and you're an advocate of mind-body practice, please contact us because we're building a case for the fact that this is a good thing for the military. And I think some portions of the military already understand that. But if you think of being in battle as somewhat similar to the trauma of surgery, mind-body practice is now being used pre- and post-surgery. And the reason why it can't be just post is because you have to train the person to do the practices for their health. So the point here is that think of going into surgery. You teach the person Qigong before they go to surgery, and then as soon as they wake up from the anesthetic, the nurse can say, remember to do your Qigong practice. Now, if you haven't had training in Qigong before you went into the surgery, the words remember to do your Qigong practice don't mean anything. If you've had training in Qigong before you go into surgery, what happens is that when somebody says remember to do your Qigong practice, you know what to do. Now, let's transport the analogy to the military. If you go into the trauma of battle, and by the way, not everybody is traumatized by battle, but many, many people are. And you've heard the news on the numbers of suicides of people in the military and so forth, and the statistics on the amount of family violence for people who have been deployed into active combat is very high. And so
Mary Molina.
And so the military is now beginning to get the wisdom for the fact that if you don't teach the person mind-body practices or stress management practices or post-traumatic stress disorder prevention practices, if you don't teach the person those practices before they're traumatized, then they cannot perform to protect themselves against that trauma. Now, this is absolutely fascinating. So the buzz on this is that the way this is being discussed among the people that I was in this meeting with goes like this. In pre-deployment, meaning before going into the trauma of battle, the interest is in what's called preparation and readiness. And usually preparation and readiness for battle means, you know, to train to be in conflict. Well, they're adding now to that as a pre-deployment strategy, readiness in the area of managing stress, conflict, and panic, and et cetera. And that serves to put the Qigong and Tai Chi information in to these soldiers, Yoga too, into these soldiers previous to the onslaught of that great trauma. And then during the deployment, it's called resilience or resiliency. In other words, expanding the capacity of the soldier to tolerate the severity of the experience of deployment. And then post-deployment, on return, the program is called reintegration, meaning to be able to apply what you learned before deployment in Qigong and Tai Chi, remember how you applied it when you were in the deployment context in conflict, and now to apply Qigong and Tai Chi as methodologies for post-traumatic stress disorder prevention. And just a personal note on this is that during the Vietnam War, I was eligible for a bunch of reasons, I didn't have to go. It mainly had to be, mainly it was associated with what was called the lottery at the time. I do not believe in a war as a way of solving problems, but I do not believe in neglecting our soldiers. And for my whole life, I've wanted to be able to bring Qigong and Tai Chi to the military. And when I went into this meeting with this general, it was so inspiring to hear that this news about mind-body practice had penetrated into this institution that protects our nation. Sometimes we're protected from real threats. Other times we're protected from phantom threats. The point is that the soldiers that are on the front line are on alert. Doesn't matter. And to me, it was really just so, so inspiring to be in that experience. And just as an even more personal note, the general, when the meeting was over, I couldn't even believe it. The general hugged me. So, Rhonda, let's go on.
Okay, the next topic is the National Institutes for Health Mind-Body Week, and you've been invited to do a keynote presentation. Tell us about why this is significant.
Well, the NIH is the United States government's largest research institution in healthcare and medicine, and it's existed for many, many decades. It's made up of a number of institutions. It's not the institute, it is the institutes. And among the larger ones are the National Institute for the Heart, Lung, and Blood and the National Cancer Institute. And there are many others associated with the neurological research and neurological and research and metabolic and more. Now, within the last decade, there's a new office at the NIH, which was originally called the Office of Alternative Medicine, which is now called the National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine. And the National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine has a lot of really interesting information, much of it on Qigong and Tai Chi. And if you go to the research page at the iiqtc.org that I was pointing to earlier, there's a file on there called Complementary and Alternative Medicine Research Position, and it's from the NIH office, the NCCAM. Now, what's interesting about this latest breakthrough is that you would assume that what is called the National Institutes of Medicine Mind-Body Week. You would assume that the National Institutes of Medicine's Mind-Body Week would be sponsored by the National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine, but it is not. And here's the breakthrough, is that when you look at the NIH really carefully, complementary medicine is everywhere. In fact, there's even an argument that says that we should shut down the NCCAM, the NCAM, the National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine, because complementary medicine is being performed and researched by all of the institutes. And if you're crazy enough to want to look into all of this, you'll see that all those institutes are doing research on acupuncture and herbal medicine and mindfulness meditation and Qigong and Tai Chi and yoga and more. So the significance of National Institutes of Medicine Mind-Body Week, which is slated for September of 2009, is that the National Institutes of Medicine have never mentioned mind-body practice before in the history of their existence. This is happening now. We are in a renaissance. And I am so honored to be involved with this. The host institute is the National Institutes for the Heart, Lung, and Blood. And it is the Office of Innovation at the Institute of Heart, Lung, and Blood that's doing this event. And they've actually invited me to give a keynote, for which I am very, very excited. We will be sending you information on this. The webpage, I just talked to the person today at the NIH, the webpage to announce this is going to be up somewhere around June 19th. And following that, we will be sending an announcement to our mailing list regarding that. So if you know anybody that you think should be on this mailing list, be sure that they go to our website and notice over there on the left-hand side of the page, there's a place to put in your email address, and that puts you onto that list. The last thing that I'd like to say here about this is that when major institutions in our government show signs of being interested in things that the public has been interested in a really long time, what it means is that the grip of the old paradigm is weakening. And the powers that be and the vested interests, the people who would stand around or sit around or be sitting at lunch or going through meetings and saying, oh, well, don't mention mind-body practice or don't mention complementary medicine, those people have basically had to stop saying that. So the barriers to the natural proliferation and diffusion of knowledge and information about empowering people to heal themselves for no cost, because after all, the medicine that's produced within the human body is produced in the human body for free, the wisdom of having a society based on self-reliance, and oh, by the way, I mean, we've always believed the American society is based on self-reliance, but if you look for one place where there's the least self-reliance of all, it's healthcare, and it's a tragedy. And so the fact that our NIH, our National Institutes of Health, is sponsoring an annual event called Mind-Body Week, well, that's just... it's a paradigm shift. It's the new world. You know, the new world looks and feels a lot like the old world. Things don't happen in a big way suddenly, but small little pieces have been assembled over decades, and it's starting to show up in a marvelous sort of way. So anyway, we'll be sending you information about NIH Mind-Body Week probably sometime following June 20th. Rhonda.
Thanks. The next item has to do with the China's key text on medical Qigong, which you and an international team of translators have translated, and the release is scheduled for September 2009. What about this? This sounds exciting to me.
Excuse me.
Bless you.
Yes. It is very exciting. There's a couple of things to say about this, the concept of medical Qigong. Because people say, oh, well, medical Qigong, that must be better than regular Qigong. Well, I can tell you that my first Tai Chi class was in 1967. I started to study Chinese medicine in earnest in 1971. I graduated from that study and began my clinical practice in 1977.
Darren Hill.
Between now and then, I have been to China 8 times with one goal only, and that is to understand Qi. And I can report to you that, I'm sorry, somebody just came on the line and sort of shifted my thinking around. Oh, yes. Okay, so we're on to medical Qigong. I can report to you that the difference between medical Qigong and regular Qigong for 95% of the conversation is zero. Now, I know that there's probably people on the phone who would say, but wait a minute, medical Qigong has got to be more important than regular Qigong. It's got the word medicine in front of it. And you'll get a lot of different points of view on this, and I'm so sorry if I'm upsetting you by saying this, but my own personal view, and you got to remember that when somebody says something, it's just an opinion. I would not even ever suggest that anything that I would say is anything more than an opinion. And if you think about it really clearly, when people in high places with PhDs, the presidents of universities, the presidents of companies, the presidents of countries, the leaders of the great religious traditions, when they tell you what they think the truth is it really the truth or is it just their opinion? So anyway, that's my point on opinion. So it is my opinion that medical Qigong and regular Qigong are the same thing. Any kind of Qigong is healing Qigong. Healing Qigong can be used in medical environments. That, therefore, any Qigong is medical Qigong when it's in a medical environment. That's my view. Now, there's a lot of people who are in the business, and I do mean, in fact, the business, of convincing you that medical Qigong is more expensive and more important and more powerful. And you can go with that opinion if you're inclined to do so, or you can form your own opinion. I would just tell you that my opinion is that that's not true, that it is in fact a business pitch. And I don't want to get too lost on that whole idea, because in the final analysis, every Qigong is gorgeous Qigong. Every Tai Chi is beautiful Tai Chi. Anybody who's learning Tai Chi, whether they're stumbling all over the place or whether they are absolutely perfected at it, is to me a golden soul, someone who is a part of the solution, somebody who cares enough for themselves and their society to be responsible for their own well-being. So when we start to debate the fine points of the relationship between this kind of Qigong and that kind of Qigong, frankly, I'm really not that interested in those conversations. I want to be in conversations that are positive. So I just wanted to give that opinion about medical Qigong. We'll go on. Now, the reason why I said yes to translating the clinical sections of this book, it's a very, very interesting book. It's a big book. It's the official book on medical Qigong in China. And I wanted to know, I said yes to this because I know it was going to be a big, difficult, lengthy, labor-intensive project, and I was right, it was, and it was nearly horrifically overwhelming and distracting during times when there was other things that I should have been paying or could have been paying attention to, but it was also a real joy to do it. The reason I said yes was I wanted to know one thing. I wanted to know, is the official Chinese view of medical Qigong that it is somehow different than regular Qigong? And I'm thrilled to report to you that from all that I could tell from reading most of this book that's been translating and to have translated personally the clinical chapters, they wanted somebody who's a doctor of Oriental medicine to do the clinical chapters. I can report to you that the definition of medical Qigong in China is any kind of Qigong, any responsible sort of Qigong, any practical form of Qigong that's done for a medical reason. So to me that's thrilling because it really, it basically demonstrates that this view that medical Qigong is something unique, special, different. No. Now, there is one thing that I'll say in addition about that, and that is that typically we teach Qigong to people to heal themselves in general terms. So, in other words, the average Tai Chi and Qigong teacher is not diagnosing and they are not prescribing. So what makes medical Qigong is that there's a diagnosis involved and a prescription involved. But think of it. If all Qigong supports functionality, then is it more important to do a specific kind of Qigong that you get from an expert that you don't understand and don't feel comfortable with, or is it more important to do any form of Qigong that feels right to you? And this is sort of the basis of our training courses in the teaching of Qigong. We do teach some of the Chinese medicine aspects of Qigong in those courses. But overall, what we're doing is making it simple and accessible, because think of it, when it's accessible, people can do it. If it's not accessible, then it becomes complex and out of reach. And so the final little note on this is we will let you know when this book publishes. You know, a proposed publication date of September, I think, is a little naive. It's probably going to take till 2010 to get this book out. But we will announce it to you, and we'll try to arrange some kind of a discount, because I think it's probably going to be a pretty hefty, fairly expensive book. So watch for news on that. And Rhonda, let's go on.
The last piece before we go to the questions submitted by people that responded and also the Q&A on upcoming events has to do with Tai Chi Easy and its implementation by major institutions in California, Nebraska, Arizona, and Arkansas. Just wondered if you'd say a little bit about that. We'll move on to our questions.
Yeah, thank you, Rhonda. How this one goes is that we were involved. The Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi was involved with a project. And by the way, I'll give you a website on this. It's taichieasy.org, taichieasy.org. And then at the top, there's a link for what's called the National Expert Meeting on Qigong and Tai Chi. This National Expert Meeting was funded with a $250,000 grant that was given to the University of Illinois and our institute, the Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi, was involved with that, a nonprofit that we're associated with, the Healer Within Foundation, and also the National Council on Aging in Washington, D.C. Now, if you click that button at taichieasy.org up on the left-hand side, it'll take you to a bunch of information about the National Expert Meeting. I will just very briefly say that the main breakthrough of all these people, these researchers, there were 15 researchers, 10 people from policy, large organizations, the YMCA and so forth, and the outcome of this, the big question that was asked by this group was, is it okay to teach more accessible forms of Qigong and Tai Chi? In other words, do you lose something if you make it simple? And the answer was, you lose complexity, you lose some esoteria, but you do not lose effectiveness. Now, the other thing that you lose is, instead of perfecting to be able to get, you know, for people to participate and feel comfortable, they don't have to go to a high level of perfection. In fact, we have a rule that we teach our teachers, which is it's better to do it wrong than not at all. Meaning that if you've got a group of people and they're doing something, as long as they're following the rules of staying in the safety zone, taking care of themselves, modifying the practice for their own situation, then it doesn't really matter if they're doing it right or wrong. So the National Expert Meeting for Qigong and Tai Chi determined that it was okay, safe, and even wise to teach people to share Qigong and Tai Chi. They can't be called teachers because you got to have 200 hours, according to the National Qigong Association. You need 200 hours to be a Tai Chi or a Qigong teacher. And the Tai Chi Easy is a 25-hour course. And we teach this, we call it a Tai Chi Easy Practice Leader, and we teach this course to social service, teachers in schools, health ministries in faith-based organizations, to fitness people from fitness institutions and so forth. And so the way we do this, the way we deliver this is typically through major regional social service entities. And so in Nebraska, we worked with the Panhandle Region, Regional Health Authority, and in Arkansas, we work with the Southern Arkansas Council on Aging. In California, we worked with the Asian Pacific Medical Group, and when we were in Arizona, we worked with the Arizona State University Nursing School. And so this training is often done in institutions for the employees of those institutions. However, there are three, and we're going to probably talk a little bit more about this in a minute, there are three trainings that we do annually for, entrepreneurs, people who do not work for those agencies, or people who work for those agencies, but those agencies have not put these programs together yet. And one of those is coming up in July at the National Wellness Institute in Wisconsin. So if you're interested in Tai Chi Easy, there's a calendar on that site, and it'll tell you about these trainings. One is at the National Wellness Institute. The other one, which happens actually right before that, is at the Omega Institute in New York. And then a little bit later, we do a training at the Esalen Institute in California. And Tai Chi Easy is mostly Qigong. It's made up largely of the practices in the healer within, which are called Buzhong Qigong. Buzhong Qigong means, Bu means make strong, Zhong means the body, in the way that the body coordinates its function, and then Qigong means Qigong. So that's make the body more strong in its coordinated function, Qigong. And then the second part of Tai Chi Easy is five movements from traditional Tai Chi. Now, you probably, many of you know that traditional Tai Chi is 108 movements. That's a mountain that most people can't climb, and particularly people who are unwell or traumatized. And so for Tai Chi Easy, we use the Qigong from the healer within, also called the Vitality Enhancement Method, plus we work with five Tai Chi movements. And we'll probably have a few questions on Tai Chi Easy. But what's exciting about this for myself and all the people that we've trained as teachers, so IIQTC in a teacher training program, we've trained about between 200 and 250 teachers all over the United States, Canada, Mexico, Europe, even Asia. People come from Asia to study integral Qigong and Tai Chi because it's less tangled up in lineages and a more practical contemporary approach to things. And our 200-hour graduates who are teachers, they then go back to their communities not as Tai Chi Easy practice leaders, because those graduates only have 25 hours. They go to their community as a Tai Chi Easy teacher with 200 hours of training. So they have a lot more depth to it. But honestly, in a school system or in a hospital, surgical recovery room, or in a military boot camp, or in a social service, drug and alcohol addiction program, and so forth, a lot of depth in Qigong and Tai Chi is not necessary. A really good, solid background for 25 hours is enough. And so let me leave that there for now. And then, Rhonda, let's go to questions, and I know we're going to arrange the questions in number one. We're going to do a few questions around kind of general concerns and considerations. I will answer these questions fairly quickly. And then for those of you who are interested in these trainings that we have coming up, both Tai Chi Easy and the teacher training, the level one that we're doing in October, please stay around if you can so that we can get your questions answered about that. So, Rhonda, to you.
Right, and I want to thank everybody who submitted questions. We've got probably more questions than time, so just bear with us. The first question comes from somebody named Gary, who says, after practicing Taoist Tai Chi since November, my whole life is improving. I think I'm Benjamin Button. You know the movie where the character becomes younger? Would you briefly discuss the aging U.S. population, i.e. baby boomers, and their need to following active sports lives to transition into exercise for life and its many benefits to body, mind, and spirit? This is a good question.
Yes, I will do it briefly, and I love the the Benjamin Button concept. And in fact, this is classic in the traditional Chinese context. There's actually a method which runs through the theories of all Qigong and Tai Chi, which has to do with returning to origin, And so the Benjamin Button film is actually a Taoist movie. The story was written by Faulkner. I don't know if he knew anything about Taoism, but basically, have you ever thought, wow, wouldn't it be cool if instead of getting older and dying, if I was born older and I got younger and was reabsorbed into the womb and then back into the cosmos? And the Chinese actually, on purpose, with intent, focus on the idea of returning to origin. And we don't have time to go into that now, but it's something that we talk about a lot in all of the levels of workshops that we do, whether it's for the public or for professionals. Now, this person's, Gary's question about the importance of being active, exercising, and so forth, well, absolutely. And you may remember that years ago, there was the Surgeon General's recommendations on smoking, which basically eliminated the smoking industry, or we only wish, completely eliminated smoking from the human population. But there are still smokers, but as you know, there's a lot less. And right around that same time, there was also the Surgeon General's insights on physical activity. And you may remember at the time there were articles in magazines and newspapers everywhere that proved through research that mild activity is just as good as aggressive activity for health. And in fact, aggressive exercise can cause injuries that mild exercise does not cause, so that in the net, it's actually true, according to statistics, that mild exercise has at least as much disease prevention capacity as vigorous exercise. Now, we won't talk too much more about this, but I really want to congratulate Gary for the for stumbling into the experience that he's having, and to think about how many people in your community, Gary, are eligible to have the experience that you're having. You know, with the spike in the number of people in your community that's associated with the aging baby boom, the population of people who could be having the experience that you're having is huge. So then we have to ask the question, how many of those people are ever actually having that experience, and are there enough teachers? So I really want to encourage you, Gary, and anybody else who's inclined to want to listen to this challenge, I'm challenging people everywhere, whether they've ever done mind-body practice or not, to consider the possibility of learning enough about this to actually share with your friends, lead practice sessions, gather people together for qi, and a cup of tea, Lamont, I know you're out there somewhere, Laoshan. You know, tea soothes the mind, gathers people together for conversation. Qigong soothes the mind and the body, gathers people together for conversation. These baby boomers are wise, older people these days. It's perfect that a renaissance would be occurring right now. It's an interesting time for older people to be really vital and demonstrate the power of a sustainable wellness program. So let's go on, Rhonda, but thanks, Gary.
Next question comes from Matthew, who says, as a martial artist and Qigong practitioner, I'm aware that there is a lot of published and practiced stuff on Qigong that is not, constructive or worth the time. He's asking, where are the best places to find credible, critical, peer-reviewed information on the practice of Qigong? We talked about this a little bit earlier. Who are the people that inspire you in the field of Qigong, and who do you think are the most progressive practitioners and teachers?
That's way too long a question for me to answer in great detail, but say that person's name again.
Matthew.
So, Matthew, you know, definitely go to IIQTC.org and then go to the research page and then find that article that is not yet published, but it is accepted for publication with revisions from the American Journal of Health Promotion. So that's your source. I mean, you can go to the Medline. That's the National Library of Congress. The National Library of Medicine at the Library of Congress. You can find that on the web, and you can search the peer-reviewed literature there. But basically, myself and Dr. Larkey and another incredible researcher named Carol Rogers have done all the work for you, so it's there in that article. Then, in terms of this whole question of the availability of information, I love that question, and I want everybody to tune in. the most important source of information on wellness and well-being is you. You are the person who lives in that skin. Your soul is the soul that inhabits that body. Your intelligence is the key intelligence in regards to answering questions about the relevance of certain strategies. Now, listen carefully. If somebody says, you know, here's 10 strategies, and some of them are safe and like they're foods and exercises, and then others of them are like surgeries. So you might say to yourself, oh my gosh, what should I do? Should I do the food or the exercise, or should I do the surgery? Well, think to yourself, what is safe? And the answer is food and exercise are safe. So the first thing to do, no matter whether you're going to get the surgery or not, is to begin to learn more about what will happen if you exercise your mind and your body and nourish yourself and rest yourself and hydrate yourself and engage in relationships with positive people. So you can derive the answer to the question of, like, for instance, when I drink milk, am I allergic to it? Well, drink milk, and then if you're allergic to it, you'll find signs. You'll fall asleep. You'll get woozy. You'll get dizzy. Your heart rate will speed up. You'll break out. You'll have your lungs will fill up with fluid. Then you stop drinking milk. And then you say, well, what about goat's milk? You know, okay, take note. Use your own intelligence to gather the information. Well, what about rice milk? Okay, what about this Tai Chi? Well, when I went to that Tai Chi class, the master was shouting at me all the time and pushing my body into positions that weren't comfortable. Okay, well, maybe you love that, or maybe you don't. Let's go to this other Qigong class. Say, oh, well, that person, you know, I don't think that Qigong was that impressive, but I really like the person. They made me laugh a lot. Well, now, my wisdom for me, and I'm not saying that my wisdom for you, only my wisdom for me would say, I'm going to go to this Qigong class and learn as much as I can because I love to be around people who are robust, hearty, full of faith, and inspired and humorous. And I'm going to let that angry Tai Chi guy go. So the answer to the question for where's the best source of information, it's your experience. Now, in terms of the people that I respect the most, you know, honestly, that is a can of worms. And I have a personal promise to myself, and I call upon the people who are the students in our training courses to entertain the possibility of taking on this behavior, which is I don't study the people who are my contemporaries. I do not borrow from the people who are my contemporaries, and I do not judge the people who are my contemporaries, whether they're in Europe, the United States, or China. So I cannot say, because of a personal commitment to a certain level of integrity, who my favorite, most respected contemporary teachers are. Sorry about that. But what I can tell you is that traditionally I am absolutely a devotee of Lao Tzu, the author of the Tao Te Ching, Patanjali, the author of the Yoga Sutras, Chuang Tzu, the author of those awesome insights that came after Lao Tzu, and many of the great Taoist, Zhang Daoling, the guy that sort of started the Taoist church. And I'm not really a church type person, but you know, it's a beautiful nature-based type of like a Native American approach to things with a beautiful medicine wheel and so forth. Zhang Daoling. going back into the 70s, I would tell you that my biggest hero from the early portion of the Qigong in the post Mao breakout was Guolin. Guolin's walking Qigong, gorgeous. I'm also really a fan of the original Yang family and the original Chen family. To me, Chen Tai Chi is one of the most beautiful things that the human body has ever accomplished. And so I know that I haven't done a very good job of directing you to contemporary teachers, but honestly, if I go in that direction, it ends up getting too convoluted, and I don't want to go there. Rhonda.
Something I've always heard you say, Dr. Yonka, is that it's the teaching that's valuable, not the teacher.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for adding that in there.
So, because that's something I've always remembered you saying to me in my own practice, so that's brought value. Next question comes from Deb, and she wants to know if you know of any studies on the effects of Tai Chi or Qigong on ADHD kids.
I'm going to take this very, very, very briefly. No studies, Deb, that I know of. I'm so sorry, but I would suggest that you go onto the web and do a little research. You may find some people who, you know, have positive experiences. I would tell you that my own personal view is that Tai Chi and Qigong are good for everything, and I'm not kidding. I really mean it. So probably the quickest pathway is to look for a way to get the person that you feel is the ADHD individual into a relationship with some form of Qigong or Tai Chi, and just do your own research. Notice how that works out. Rhonda, let's go on.
I'm going to combine the next two questions from Diana and Cynthia. And one is from Diana: what are the top three benefits for the average person participating in a beginner Tai Chi or Qigong class? From Cynthia comes: what are the three things that you think are the most essential to follow when you do your Qigong or Tai Chi practice?
Well,
so
the
top three
things,
benefits and top three things to practice.
The top three practices are the three intentful corrections. So do it again. Adjust your posture, and that would include moving the body. Second correction, adjust your breath, which would mean either paying attention to the breath, just simply paying attention to breath, or deepening the breath. And then paying attention to the mind or adjusting the mind. And the easiest thing to do there is to pay attention to the present. So no matter what your Tai Chi or Qigong is, you'll be constantly applying the three intentful corrections. The three benefits are, the biggest benefit is the shift in the autonomic nervous system, putting you into the relaxation state. And I suggest that anybody go onto the internet and read about the relaxation response, and it'll be delineated a whole bunch, like hundreds of things happen in the body when you initiate the relaxation response. The second one is less widely understood, is the lymph system. When you do these movements and these deep breathings in a coordinated sort of way, it turns up the volume of the lymph system radically, not just mildly, radically. And the lymph system is the baseline for both the elimination system and the immune system. So your neurological and lymphatic, but then the lymphatic really pushes through to both the functional enhancement of the elimination system and the more rapid delivery of immune cells. So let's leave it there. Well, and of course, the last thing would be, you know, balancing the chi. Go ahead.
Right, the next question, and I want to just ask you, Dr. Yonka, whether I should start moving toward more the training specific, or do we have time for a couple more questions that aren't training?
Let's do one more kind of general concern question, and then how many of the general concern questions are left after that?
Let's see. I have at least I have about four general questions, so we may not be able to address those and still...
Let's do it this way. What we'll do is I'll answer one more general question, then we'll go to specific questions because we don't want to hold people up too much longer. We'll answer those specific questions that people have been waiting for regarding the trainings that we're doing. And then if you're open to it, Rhonda, we could just answer those other questions later, or if we need to close out, I'll answer them by email.
All right. Well, I just wanted to, you know, check in, see where you were at. So one last general question comes from somebody named John, and he asked, are you involved at all with Yang-style Tai Chi? And so his interest is primarily in martial arts Tai Chi and Qigong and energy generation. So he wants to know kind of like what your lineage is, and he's trying to determine whether you can help him with his energy pursuits as not only martial but medical as well.
Yeah, very good. Thank you. John, thanks for your question. well, first of all, as I said, Chen's Tai Chi is the most powerful, the most martial, the most beautiful. Wow, it's gorgeous. And Yang, actually, the Yang family, there's many, many stories about this, and who knows what the truth is, but the myth or the legend is the Yang family sent somebody to be a Chen-style learner, and that for a number of different reasons that didn't work out, and so that Yang family individual actually took a job as a servant in the compound where they were, where the Chen family did their practice, and actually watched them practicing over the wall and through the keyhole and so forth. Yang-style Tai Chi is the most widely practiced in China. Yang-style Tai Chi is the one that was brought out of mothballs after the Cultural Revolution. And the largest number of people that you ever see on television doing Tai Chi are doing Yang-style Tai Chi. However, if you saw the opening of the Olympic Games, that was Chen. that was not Tai Chi. They called it Tai Chi, but it was mostly Chen Kung Fu. So then the interesting thing about the Yang approach, John, is that there are so many different versions of it that it's almost impossible to say, you know, well, you should study the Yang style, because I guess it's my opinion. I don't really care too much about, like, who the teacher's lineage is. I care about who the teacher is as a person. And I also care about why that teacher's teaching. So if the teaching is about maximizing well-being and bringing peace into the world, I happen to be biased towards that. Now, as you know, the great Wudan, that's the name of a mountain in China, Wudan monks, the Taoist monks from Wudan and the Buddhist monks from Shaolin, they are all warriors who can kill you, but their goal is to never have to fight. And in fact, they don't even harm bugs or worms and insects, and they're often even vegetarians. So to me, when you say, I want to do Tai Chi, I would say find the teacher close to your home that you feel has the virtuous character that you align with, and study with that person until you've learned as much as you can, and then widen the net and find somebody else. And it doesn't matter whether it's Yang style or Chen style or Wu style or Sun style. This is my view, personal view. In terms of the Kung Fu applications, I happen to be fairly high on Kung Fu myself, and my Tai Chi teacher is Daniel Weng, W-E-N-G. His teacher, it was Chang, C-H-A-N-G, and that goes back into the Yang, Y-A-N-G, lineage. And the form of Yang-style Tai Chi that I practice is very influenced by the Chen style because of my own biases, but it comes from a Yang root. And my lineage through Daniel Wang and Master Chang and back through the Yang family goes into that Yang lineage that we described. But I want to tell you, and I don't think that anybody else should think like this, but I think like this. I don't care about lineage. When I meet people who prove how cool they are by being able to remember the names of a lot of Chinese people, I am not impressed. But when I see them do the practice and I can see that they're devoted, or when I see them do the practice and I can see that they have great virtue, that turns me on, personal bias. And then finally, about the energy, martial arts are not energy arts unless they are. And what that means is that a lot of times we learn the martial arts from people who talk about energy, but actually what they're really talking about is brute force, and that brute force is often driven by anger. And anger is chi, but it is not virtuous chi. And so what I would say regarding the presence of the energy aspect of the martial arts or the healing arts is that those are almost always cultivated, they're cultivated to be applied through Kung Fu, but the energy arts are actually not Kung Fu. They're sort of pre-Kung Fu. They're the baseline for certain kinds of Kung Fu. They're the baseline for the most virtuous and, I believe, the most powerful forms of Kung Fu. So we'll leave it there. And John, if you want to send some kind of a response, I will respond to you. And thank you so much for your question. Rhonda, let's answer some questions about the Tai Chi Easy and the level one in October.
Primarily, I have questions about the level one. The first comes from Sharon and also from Deb. I combined their questions because they were similar. The first is, how much of the healing promise of Qi is emphasized in the Qigong teacher training? And then there's a second component about where the teacher training is taught in the U.S.
Okay. Well, the healing promise of Qi has at its center what is called the 10 phases of cultivation and mastery. And so the 10 phases of cultivation and mastery is a framework. And that framework penetrates every aspect of any bona fide Qigong and Tai Chi training anywhere, because the 10 phases are a paradigm. And by the way, the first nine phases are about personal cultivation. The 10th phase is about transmitting Qi to others. And so really what we're going to be doing is training people to be teachers, and they are going to be teaching people to practice. And so the nine phases are the key to the overall structure for our training, and whether it's stated or not, for the training of Qigong and Tai Chi teachers in any context. And in fact, the nine phases are really archetypal and can be applied to any kind of shamanic or healing domain of pursuit or spiritual domain of pursuit. So the nine phases are the healing promise of Qi, in which the nine phases is the subject, is permeates everything that we do. Now, there is a practice, a set of practices that's associated with the nine phases that we learn to practice and learn to teach. And we learn that in level one, we review that in level two, and we review that in level three, because it includes, the nine phases includes body focus, heart-mind focus, which is intelligence and emotion, and then also spirit. And so it's always present no matter what we're doing. Now, in terms of where the trainings happen, we do our level one and two trainings centrally located in the United States. We've had people come to these trainings from Europe, South America, Thailand, and Asia, Canada, and we're absolutely clear that it's the best way to do it, so that it's centrally located. The two airports that are the most closest by are the Austin Airport and the San Antonio Airport. We will have a shuttle. We will be arranging for a shuttle in for the October training from the Austin Airport. And so when you register, those of you who are going to be registering, and I want to say something about registration, by the way, just very, very briefly. We were able to arrange a huge discount, well, I think it's a huge discount, for a very early registrations, and this discount is going to terminate or reach its deadline on June 12th. And so if you would, go to, if you're still on the net, or if you're going to the information associated with these trainings, go to the IIQTC.org and then click that button on the front page that says training, training's enrolling now or something like that. And then as you go down the page, you'll see the pricing there. And just focus on that, because we can't actually change things around to the extent that it'll be possible to make that discount last longer than the 12th of June. So then back to, so if you have questions that we can't answer here today, be in touch with our office as soon as possible, and try to get lined up in time for that discount. And then don't set your airfare until we set the shuttle, unless you aren't going to use the shuttle or going to visit friends or something like that. Okay, Rhonda, let's go on.
This comes from Daniel and what's the approximate time span does it to complete all three Qigong Tai Chi trainings, the 200-hour training, So if I started training in October, when could I be graduated? When could I graduate from the 200-hour program? So when would the approximately level 2 and level 3 be held if I started training this year?
It's a little fuzzy. The level 2 and level 3 are a little fuzzy, and here's why. Because if you can think of it, to be able to get enough people to be in a level 3 and to have that be a real success, because of the nature of life, not everybody who graduates from level 2 will be able to go on to level 3. Accidents, family deaths, graduations, weddings, etc. And so to do a level 2, we have to have more than we need for a level 3. And so that all calculates on what happens with the level 1. So let's say, for instance, if there's a very, very robust group at level 1, and we have had this experience in the past, and so it's not impossible that this would happen. We just go right from level 1 to level 2. If we have to do a second level 1 to get to level 2, then there's a little delay there. So typically, and we've been doing this for 10 years, so this is an average that's fairly, I think this is fairly reasonable. It can take anywhere from 18 months to 2 years to get to level 3, to get through level 3. Now, the most important additional thing to say is the answer to this question. Do I have to wait till I've graduated to begin teaching? And the answer is no. We encourage students who have fulfilled level 1 to go back to their communities and immediately begin applying what they've learned. And here's why. Because we're not doing any kind of manipulation. Like, for instance, if it was a massage course or a Feldenkrais course or a Rolfing course or of an herbal medicine course or an acupuncture course or any of those kinds of things, there's the potential for doing harm is higher. In the case of Qigong and Tai Chi, teaching Qigong and Tai Chi, we're simply informing and inspiring. And so the body of information that you have, while it will only be some portion of the total body of information, is immense relative to the people in your community who want to learn these things. So our definition of a teacher is someone who knows more than the students. So we don't go by that whole idea that to be a teacher you need to be a master. This is not to say that that's not a respectable idea. It's just that in our society, there's a lot of need. We have to solve not only a medical crisis, but we have to solve an economic crisis. We waste $3 trillion a year. Listen to this. We waste $3 trillion a year treating preventable diseases. Now, how much would it cost if we prevented preventable diseases? And the answer is, of course, a whole lot less. So we believe at the Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi, we believe because we draw from a wide array of resources and integrate them, that's the definition of an integral, integrate. We integrate wisdom and knowledge from a wide array of resources. And as a result, our conclusion is that there's the magnitude of the need trumps the necessity to create master teachers. The magnitude of the need instead suggests that we should do everything that we can to get people back into their communities, leading groups of Qigong and Tai Chi as soon as possible. And in fact, we have some people who've gone through level 1 and maybe level 2, and then somebody passes away and they miss level 3. And then the next time, you know, it's their husband's first vacation in many, many years. And so, you know, they've only been through level 1 and level 2, but they're still out there teaching, and they will fulfill level 3 at some point in the future. Rhonda.
The last question comes from Gisella before we open it up to callers. About do you have payment plans for the level 1 training?
Yeah, actually, I'm going to answer one other question before we do that one. I got a question today from somebody about Tai Chi Easy and the difference between Tai Chi Easy and the full 200-hour training. So let me say that first, and then we'll talk about the payment plans, and we'll go back to the other questions, Rhonda, if you're open to, you know, hanging on.
Oh, definitely.
People say, okay, you've got a 200-hour teacher training and you've got a 25-hour Tai Chi Easy training. What am I missing if I do Tai Chi Easy? And the answer is a lot. 175 hours of intensive investigation of Qigong and Tai Chi. Another way to say it is that what do I get if I do the Tai Chi Easy training? And can I then continue to the 200 hours? And the answer, of course, is yes. So in Tai Chi Easy, in the Tai Chi Easy program, there's two small pieces of what we teach in the 200 hours. The first small piece is the material that's associated with the Healer Within. It's also called Vitality Enhancement Method, which is the translation for Bujong Qigong. And it's very, very simple, very graspable Qigong practices. Yes, it's true that it's called Tai Chi, but the reason why we call it Tai Chi is that Tai Chi is named after a state in the universe that occurred at the moment of the Big Bang, which means the sudden release of yin and yang energy. So when we say Tai Chi, we don't mean Tai Chi, a martial art. We don't mean Tai Chi, an exercise. We mean Tai Chi, the state of balance and harmony of the forces of yin and yang in the universe. So anyway, Tai Chi Easy, the Tai Chi Easy program includes the very, very simple form of medical Qigong called the Vitality Enhancement Method. It's the textbook that we use is the Healer Within. And then we take five of the Tai Chi movements from the 108. We take five of those. So it's a very, very simple package. Now, people say, well, does Tai Chi Easy replace level one? No, because level one is 65 hours and Tai Chi Easy is 20 to 25 hours. Now people say then, well, you know, how do I plug this all in? And how it works is that when you're done with the 100, with the three levels of the 200-hour program, you've only really done about 180 hours. Now some people complete that program with experience from the past. So in other words, they do the three levels and then their experience from the past handles the extra 20 hours. Some people do a special project, and some people do Tai Chi Easy. So if you go to Tai Chi Easy, then the 20 hours that's not done when you do the 180 hours is complete because you've done the Tai Chi Easy program. So now then on to Rhonda's question that was brought up by someone regarding the payment plans. Yes, we definitely want to support people in these complex economic times to be able to spread these payments out. There's a period which will start at the end of the early registration. So this very, very early registration, which is a super discount, we can't give a payment plan on that because it's contingent. The whole thing's contingent on full payment by the 12th of June, I think it is. So on the 12th of June, the payment plan kicks in, and that payment plan window will exist probably until maybe through the end of August or something like that. Now, the reason why we close the payment plan out is that there's a point very close to the time of the event where if the person has the payment plan, they will not have paid for their lodging. So at that point, the payment plan formula doesn't work. So from June 12th through some as yet undetermined date, somewhere around the end of August, I believe, the payment plan will be available, and you can get information on the web starting around the 12th of June, and then you can call this office, and we will be sending, by the way, we will be sending an email to you all thanking you for being here this evening with the link for the file, you know, for the audio file for this and a couple of other things. So watch for that email. Okay, Rhonda, we can do a few more questions if you want to.
Well, did you want me to open it up to live questions?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. For if anybody has a live, well, of course, we're all alive, do *6 to unmute yourself. Otherwise, I can unmute everybody globally. I think that'll be a little too much noise. So unmute yourself with *6 on your telephone, and let's ask Dr. Yonka a question.
I was interested in, this is Liz from Brooklyn, and I was interested in maybe obtaining your books, and I was wondering how that could be done.
Are you in front of your computer?
I am.
Okay, what you do is you go to, the name of the site is feelthechi.com, and I'm going to spell it now, F-E-E-L, like reach out, touch, and feel, F-E-E-L-T-H-E-Q-I, chi spelled Q-I, .com, F-E-E-L-T-H-E-Q-I.com. And up on the left, upper left-hand corner there is a link called Books and DVDs, I think it is.
Okay.
And if you follow that link, it will take you to Book Clearinghouse, where you can get the two books and the DVD, or any one of those that you want, or any two of those that you want. Now, some people say, well, you know, can't I get a discount if I go to Amazon? And the answer is yes, you can. You'll probably get a little discount at Amazon. You'll probably pay more shipping, however. And but you can get the two books at Amazon, but you can't get the DVD at Amazon. So it's often a little cheaper in the final analysis to go to Book Clearinghouse and get all three. And did I say that clearly enough so that you know where to go?
Definitely. I have it.
Thanks, Liz.
Thanks. Yep, wish you well.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else like to *6 yourself?
Yes. Hi, doctor.
Hi.
My name is Liz from Pennsylvania, and I am thrilled to hear about the revolution.
Yes.
I am so thrilled. I've had ankylosing spondylolisthesis and spinal stenosis for many years. I am self-taught Tai Chi and Qigong master, and I am just thrilled to hear about all this news. And I'm telling you right now, I don't take any medicine. I just do the practice. And I've been staying afloat for many, many years.
Good for you. So you're a part. You're a part of how this works. You're a part of the history.
Yes, I am.
You're one of those people who can, you know, tell that story. And one of the things that I love the most is the fact that there are now so many people out there who have lived the promise.
And I agree with you with the medical Qigong.
Oh, good. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Well,
I
did you have a question at all?
That. Yes, I do. I've been thinking about teaching it, and I was wondering maybe I should just use the basic principles to teach it to the elderly.
Yeah, there's two approaches to teaching this. Some people are in situations where they need a certification to they have the credibility to teach. There are others like yourself whose credibility is that they have lived this. And so I would say, you know, as long as you don't diagnose, and given you've agreed with me about the medical Qigong thing, I know that you're not going to be diagnosing. I would say, you know, don't recommend anything around diagnostic language. So, you know, you wouldn't want to ever say anything like, oh, yeah, well, you have heart disease or you have cancer. Even if you have, you know, intuitive insight, I would recommend that you don't do a lot of overt intuiting in public. In private conversations, if you happen to be very intuitive, I wouldn't, you know, there's no reason why not to do that. People can make their own decisions about whether they think you're, you know, correct or not. And
just keep it general and basic, you would say?
Keep it general and basic, and mostly keep it fun and easy.
Yes. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, we wish you well, Liz. Look forward to meeting you sometime.
I wanted to ask you about the New York, because that's the closest.
Well, you know, if you go to the calendar on any one of these sites, you'll find that I'm going to be at the Omega Institute in New York.
Omega, okay.
Coming up a little later this month. And the two programs that we're doing at Omega are fantastic. And so you'll get the scoop on those from the calendar. And then if you want to drive a little tiny bit further, you can go to Kripalu in August. I'll be at Kripalu.
Well, thank you so much, Doctor. I'm just so thrilled about the revolution. It's about it's about time.
We wish you well.
Thank you. You too.
Anyone else would like to star six and ask an additional question to Dr. Yonka?
Stauber in San Antonio.
Hello. This
good
is Cynthia.
Doctor. I'm a student of Mary Martha McNeil here in San Antonio.
Yes, sir. Say your name again.
Stauber Muslim. San Antonio. Uh-huh. Yes.
Hello.
I was on a hands device. I'm on a prescription for a blood thinner, Coumadin Warfarin, and I've educated myself to know that it is rat poison and I hate it. I definitely want to get off. I am a practitioner, probably definitely I'm enthused to, you know, intensify my practice. What else can I do to help my mind-body practice to get off this prescription medication that has side effects?
Yes, sir. I appreciate your question. Well, it goes like this. In good faith and with great sincerity, continue to refine your practice.
Okay.
Because as you refine your practice, it's almost guaranteed that you will enhance function. And as you enhance function, the aspects of your system that were perceived through the diagnosis to be, shall we say, failing or deficient, will over time increase their capacity. And what we never do is tell a person to go off their medication. So you have to either demonstrate to your physician that you no longer need this medication, or you have to demonstrate to yourself that you're well enough to go off of the medication, which means basically you're firing your doctor, which we never suggest. We do hear from people who have fired their doctor and done fine, but we never suggest that. And so I would say, just with enthusiasm and sincerity, and by the way, the big chi words are love and action and insight, and then also enthusiasm is a huge chi word. Sincerity is a huge chi word. So if you bring enthusiasm and sincerity to your practice, no matter what practice you're doing, you will be maximizing your function, and over time, you are at risk for enhancing your health to the extent that you will not need that medication.
Thank you. Thank you.
Indeed. Okay, there was somebody else, a woman with a question.
Cynthia?
Hi, Cynthia.
Hi, yes. I appreciate you doing this free seminar, and I look forward to seeing you soon in Asilomar, the National Qigong Conference.
Oh, that'll be great.
Yes. My question is, I was just interested on what the five movements you picked out for your Easy Tai Tai Chi classes. Which five did you pick?
Yeah, we chose the very, very classic first movement, which is in the Yang style. It's called parting the horse's mane.
Okay.
We chose the second classic traditional movement from the Yang style, which is called, and this is the Yang style short form, the Beijing short form, which is called brush knee twist step or brush knee punch.
Okay.
And we chose the third movement, which is called repulse the monkey.
Mm-hmm.
And we jumped forward to hands like clouds. And then we conclude with the finishing movement of Tai Chi, which is sometimes called gathering from heaven and earth. Now, the first three, we actually modified the names of them because people like the names of Tai Chi movements, especially if they make sense. And the first one, instead of calling it parting the horse's mane, if you know Tai Chi, you know that it just hardly, you can hardly tell, like, well, where's the horse and where's the horse's mane? And, you know,
right.
All that. And so we call the first one harmonizing yin and yang, or also in most cases we say harmonizing Tai Chi, because even yin and yang can sometimes, like if you're in a hospital or a church or a school, and I think, well, what is all this yin-yang stuff? So if we just say harmonizing Tai Chi, and as you will recall, when you hold the Tai Chi and then you do the parting the horse's mane movement, you're separating one hand from the other, which separates the yin and yang. And then on the other side, you bring them back together to hold the Tai Chi ball again, and then you separate that again. So that's called harmonizing Tai Chi. And then the second one, brush knee and punch sounds, oh my gosh, like why would I punch anybody? What I want to do is I want to heal the world and myself. So we say brush knee, send chi, and if you do Tai Chi, you kind of know what I mean by sending chi. And then the third one, repulse the monkey or repelling the monkey, which is very meaningful in Kung Fu, and it even has a certain meaning when we think of the monkey mind. But, you know, the average individual doesn't really know what the monkey mind is. It's a whole conversation. So we call that one cutting through to clarity. And as you step backwards, you may recall, if you're familiar with the movements, that your backhand is coming forward in a kind of a forward slicing knife, you know, that's called the knife hand or the axe hand.
Mm-hmm.
And so we call that cutting through to clarity. And then hands like clouds are hands like clouds, and gathering heaven and earth are gathering heaven and earth.
Well, you pick some. I do practice Yang style and Sun style, too. I love the ones you picked for the set. Those are very nice, healing feelings.
Thank you very much. Well, I look forward to seeing you. Be sure to introduce yourself at the NQA meeting.
I certainly will. I'm actually going to sell a book myself that I've been working on. It's called The Tao of Teaching Tai Chi. So I look forward to seeing you there.
Wow, that'll be fun.
Yeah. Take care, and thank you for doing this.
Yeah.
I really learned a lot, and I appreciate all you do.
Thanks, Cynthia.
Oh, what a pleasure. Travel safely.
Okay.
Anybody else before we close out? This has been a long, phone call, so maybe we should. We'll say going once, going twice. Anybody want to give it a go?
Star six yourself.
You want to go?
This is Ann from PA, and this is a really quick question and maybe a good one to end on, because I'd like to know what is a good length of a Qigong practice. I've been practicing Qigong off and on for several years, and, you know, depending on time, I devote more or less time, and I'm always wondering, gosh, maybe if I did it an extra 20 minutes, I'd get that extra punch.
Well, okay, now there's two answers to the question, and actually, you know, you already did one of the answers, which is I do it more or less depending on my time. Now, that's actually the best answer. So every other answer that says you should do this and you should do that, and even when you say to yourself, you know, well, I should do this or I should do that, when you hear the word should, whether it's stated out loud or whether it's stated as a part of your internal conversation, it creates stress. And
okay.
So Qigong and Tai Chi are not benefiting you when you're in the should context. That's one of the reasons why we teach teachers not to pay that much attention to whether people are getting it right. A lot of Tai Chi teachers will suggest that, you know, unless you get it right, you're doing it wrong. I would really suggest reconsidering that and say, as long as I'm doing it right, and I can perfect the magnitude of how right I do it over time. So when you have more time, do more. When you have less time, don't scold yourself. Just say, okay, I'm clear, I don't have the time, I'm going to stop now, and skip the scolding or skip the wishing or whatever else it is, because it's just having a negative influence on your autonomic nervous system. Now, there's something interesting about time, and that is the time in the definition of time that we understand from the great scientists who understand the nature of the world, including Einstein and the quantum physicists, there is no time. So then it really becomes a question of how am I perceiving time and what do I value? So if your nervous system is so tensed up saying you got to make this phone call, you got to make this phone call, you might as well stop practicing. But if you have cultivated the capacity to say to yourself, I can make that phone call some time and then remain in the practice without scolding yourself, then you've done yourself a favor. You've actually borrowed time, created time. And so people say, I wish I could find time. Well, nobody's been able to find time. But can you make time? The answer is yes, I can create time, I can make time. And so if you can make time and stay in the Qigong mood, then I would say continue the practice. But if you try to make time and can't stay in the Qigong mood, then I would say curtail the practice and then start it up another time. All right, friends, I'm going to let Rhonda close out, but this has been thrilling. You know, we love it that you're there. We love it that you love what we're doing. I want to say that I really, really appreciate Rhonda being the convener and the hostess for this call. She does a great job of it. Those individuals whose questions we have not answered, we will try to answer you by email. If you have questions that are left unanswered, please feel free to communicate with us. And then, Rhonda, please just go ahead and wrap this up, and thank you so much for your service.
Thank you, Roger.
Thank you. First of all, thanks again, Dr. Yonka, for your time, and also his office manager, Jennifer Carroll, who helped put all the questions together and help notify people where to call and when to call and that kind of thing. So be looking for an email from Dr. Yonka's office with some points that we talked about during this event, and also, it will have the link to the recording if you couldn't stay for the whole time or, you know, you wanted to recap something that was said during the call. So I'm going to turn off the recording now and say good night and hope you all have a wonderful evening. Thanks for showing up.
Thanks, Rhonda.
Bye.
Thanks.